You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 18 August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Mateta Tulari touching on those really standout BHP results. Keith McLachlan, Pfizer as his local global healthcare stock. And then Henry Biddlecombe from Anchor. Can Apple still double from here as, what, a $2.5 trillion company become a $5 trillion? The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Exit Australia and list Woolworths food separately is the claim from a top retail analyst. I don't disagree with the idea, but if you list food separately, I've got clothing. No one wants the Woolies clothing. That's never really worked. Business Day, Momentum expects profits to fall 70%. That is a top up COVID-19 provisions by another $1.6 billion to cover mortality claims. Morning markets, US was red, S&P off 0.7, NASDAQ down 0.9%. Asia is green, Sydney up 0.1% and Turkey up 0.6%. Commodities green overnight, gold $1,793 an ounce, Rand 1485. Top 40 looking for a red open, but 0.7% down. That as Tencent is trading essentially flat, up a fraction of a percent.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Mateta Tulari, head FX execution at RMB. Mateta, appreciate the time. We've been seeing storming results from the miners, diversified single commodity miners over the last couple of weeks. BHP really came to the party and kind of knocked it out the park.
Morning, Simon. And I think, as you say, it's been quite an interesting couple of months, especially with the amount of results that have been released from, I suppose, you know, in the US, they call it the FANGs, where it's the likes of Facebook, Apple, Amazon, etc. And then here, we call it the HANGs, so which is the likes of Harmony, Anglo, Northern Platinum, Goldfield, Sibanye. And I mean, obviously, it's been quite an interesting ride. And I suppose, you know what, as you say, Northern, obviously, you know, they've announced a major improvement in their year-on-year annual profits, following an increase in the average PGM basket price. I mean, obviously, they have said that they're expecting to deliver a solid set of financial results for the year ended 30 June this year. Obviously, I think it is really underpinned by a lot of the production growth and obviously the increase in the overall PGM commodity prices, despite the backdrop of the ongoing global COVID-19 pandemic, especially with this Delta variant still wreaking a lot of havoc. But nonetheless, I suppose Northam, you know, they've benefited from a strong price, you know, in the PGM basket price and obviously a softening of the rand during the half year end to December 2020. That's where we saw the rand obviously slightly weaker. But obviously, as we all know, they operate some mines in Limpopo and in Mpumalanga, and they've said that they're expecting to deliver an increase of around 300% in earnings. You know, I think that is quite interesting because even when you just look at the sales revenue for the half year end to December, that's increased about 52%, whilst the operating profit also surged by about 75%. And you know what, as you say, you know, you just look at some of the peer group companies, you know, they've, you know, Northam has really showed that they've benefited from the high rhodium and palladium prices, and obviously the recovery in the platinum price. And you know, it's quite interesting that all the attention now will, I suppose, fall on the plans for dividends as well as growth.
Yeah.
You know, Paul Dunn, who's the CEO there, similar to Neil Froman at Sibanye, I mean, they're very bullish on the future of PGM prices for the next 10 years. And he's also announced that, you know, that the company is looking at, you know, increasing production from their current goal at this point in time. And I suppose for, you know, for South Africa as an overall economy and the way it filters through, you know, a boom in the commodity prices is really saving the fiscus from going bust. I think a lot of the mining companies are paying billions in company tax more than expected, which obviously may help South Africa, you know, pull back from its fiscal cliff. And I suppose obviously the more important thing and more immediate thing is that the tax windfall will help fund some of the most recent state interventions to cushion households and businesses from the worst pandemic that we've seen, and also overlaid by the recent civil unrest.
Yeah, I take your point on that. I mean, we're winning in two senses. You know, massive dividends coming from those mining stocks, and the taxes, and those taxes obviously going to benefit the country. Should be benefiting the ZAR. We haven't seen, we did see a bit of that. We've seen some weakness, but that sort of 50 billion budget surplus every month, going towards a stronger rand over time. Mateta Tulari, head FX execution RMB, appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan. He's an investment officer at Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the early morning time. Conversations I've been having with you and many others over the last couple of weeks and months is around the global healthcare stocks. I mean, certainly we're in the middle of a pandemic. They've been strong contenders for a while. The pandemic helps, particularly with vaccine. We'll touch on vaccine in a moment. But your preferred healthcare globally is Pfizer.
Morning, Simon. Yes, absolutely. I mean, the healthcare sector, if you just have a macro view over the last about half a decade, up to a decade, that sector's actually been under pressure, and you've seen derating in big pharma, ironically, for such important stocks. What's been nice in the pandemic to see, and perhaps nice is the wrong adjective, I shouldn't use that word, but it's definitely highlighted quite how important these large pharmaceutical companies are, and how important healthcare is, you know, just generally. And should it really, as an entire sector, be trading at a multiple below the S&P 500 and big tech? I mean, Facebook is great, but I don't see Facebook keeping anyone alive. Big pharma does. So it's definitely important from a global perspective, and then from a portfolio perspective, it does offer some hedges and defensive characteristics. And within that space, Pfizer is one of the large blue chips. It's got a very balanced core portfolio. It spends about a fifth of its revenue in terms of R&D each year, which is an absolutely huge number. Yeah. Yeah. And has built a mind-boggling pipeline. Absolutely. I mean, in the space, I think Pfizer is a very defendable blue chip. And then we zoom into the granular nitty-gritty around the vaccine and mRNA and the like that we're going to discuss. And I think Pfizer stands out as a really, really asymmetrical investment in this portion of the market.
And its breadth of as well. I mean, we've over the years talking about aging populations, richer populations. That just plays into it. And I like your point. I mean, you know, the Facebooks and the Apples, and we're going to talk Apple in a moment with Henry Biddlecombe. Great stocks, great businesses. But this really has the global shift to older and richer, creating wind at their back and helping drive profits.
Yeah, so if you have a look at Pfizer's portfolio pre-COVID, their largest segment was oncology, and our oncology tends to be weighted towards an older population and the like. COVID's created a huge tailwind, and the vaccines portion of their business in Q3 this year was about half of their revenue, and about 85% of that was COVID. So let's call it about 40% of group revenue came out of the COVID vaccine. But they're still at the core. There's still a very defensive portfolio weighted towards an aging population, weighted towards increasing disease burdens in terms of a population. And here's the interesting thing. even if we just assume that the COVID vaccine is a once-off, which we don't believe it is, we believe that at least there's a tail end of booster shots, which will create quite valuable revenue here. But even if you exclude the entire COVID vaccine and you just look at the bottom line from the bottom line earnings from the group's core portfolio pre-pandemic, they're trading at about a 19 times multiple against that core portfolio, which is rather strange if you think about it. That portfolio is growing at 10%, is deeply defensive, very, very profitable. And at a 19 times multiple, they are miles below the S&P 500's average price earnings, which the question needs to be asked, why?
Yeah, no, fair point. And on the vaccine, of course, they've done a JV with BioNTech, the German org, and they've used the memory RNA. And you talk, I mean, certainly we've seen the US reports coming out that they perhaps are going to, at 8 months, do a booster shot. We're seeing a couple of countries already doing it. I mean, aside from the initial inoculation of literally billions of people on planet Earth, and parts going slowly and parts going well, we've potentially got 2 or 3 billion booster shots, call it $25 a shot. That's suddenly a $50-75 billion industry. Pfizer's not the only one playing there. Of course, there's Moderna, there's AstraZeneca, there's Johnson & Johnson, but there is suddenly a whole new industry there, which we don't know whether it's here for a year or a decade or longer.
It's currently profitable, and if we roll this forward and we look at different scenarios, it goes between being attractive to just being multiples of the share price. Let's be honest, and that all depends on how many boosters a year, how long does this last, do they increase the prices, or is there deflationary pricing? I mean, one of the things to consider is if you've originally had a Pfizer shot, do you then go and get a booster from Johnson & Johnson, or do you stick with Pfizer? And the odds are the supply chains have already happened. Agreements have largely been signed. And at the consumer level, if you've had a Pfizer shot and had no bad side effects, are you going to roll the dice and try a Johnson & Johnson or a Moderna? So you've almost had first mover advantages that's going to create a little bit of stickiness in terms of the booster shots. But absolutely, I mean, our estimate is we expect the booster shots to last for a while, and we're already seeing the narrative changing to that. We can already see the share price lifting, except ironically, the share price is only at this point, in our opinion, pricing in the core portfolio. So it hasn't actually truly priced in the blue sky from the booster shots. And something we haven't touched on is, irrespective of how much the booster shot tail end is worth, the mRNA is opening up a whole blue sky avenue in terms of other vaccines. And they're already talking about, and in Pfizer's strategy, they want to incorporate that into their flu vaccine. They're looking at different viruses. They, in fact, are going to include oncology vaccine. They're talking, I mean, imagine getting a vaccine against cancer. How incredible would that be with mRNA written in?
Yeah.
So there is some absolutely science fiction things here that could happen.
Yeah, and that's the blue sky part. I mean, Moderna's talking around an mRNA HIV vaccine. And as you said, that's just kind of the add-on. That's not the base case. That's the extra. Keith McLachlan, investment officer at Integral Asset Management, talking his preferred global healthcare stock, Pfizer.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Henry Biddlecombe. He's a fund manager at Anchor Capital. Henry, appreciate the early morning. You put out a note last week that, I got to say, opened my eyes, and then it kind of read it and it made sense. I mean, you're talking, can Apple double from current levels, which is about $2.5 trillion, to around $5 trillion? Sounds staggering, but actually the mistake I made, I suspect, and perhaps many others, we're focusing on hardware, which is largely a mature and lower margin business. You're saying, hang on a second, this services business is growing, is getting bigger, and is, frankly, way better margins. And that's where it's sort of the next leg of Apple is going to come from.
Yeah, I think it's very much the next chapter of Apple's story. And you know, Apple certainly haven't spent the last decade building out a hardware business with an active install base of around 1 billion iPhones, just to leave it there. There's actually an incredible opportunity to start creating a really meaningful subscription offering, which will include, I think, at the end of the day, a combination of services and hardware in a bundle. And it's something that I think people are very likely to pay for. And when you consider that, you know, $1 of services revenue is worth roughly $2.33 in hardware revenue from a profit perspective, you realize that they actually don't have to double revenues to double their profits.
Yeah, and there's lots of space. I mean, one of the points you make in the article just astounded me. They're earning about $24 in annual services revenue per iPhone user. That's $2 a month. Heck, I'm at more than that. I pay for Apple Music. That's $60. What's that? Call it $3-$4 in truth. But at $2, you know, to get an extra one or two is not going to be that massively hard. They've got healthcare. They've got potentially health insurance they can move into. They're moving into vehicles. And these are areas we understand, never mind the ones that Tim Cook and his team are thinking about and we haven't even dreamed of yet.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you have a look at what Amazon has done with Amazon Prime, I think it's around $16 a month per household now. If you're an Amazon customer, the value proposition is just so compelling that it just makes sense to have Prime. And I think Apple are probably coming from the same angle, where if you're a user of Apple devices, it's just going to make sense to have that Apple One subscription because the value proposition is just going to be so compelling. And they've got $80 billion in free cash flow per year to make it so.
Yeah, I was chatting with Keith there. Pfizer puts 20% of revenue to R&D, but Apple's got multiples of the revenue and can do that R&D. One of the things you do caution me, you know, Apple earnings are often lumpy, and certainly there has been some re-rating of the price already as the market looks at this as a services rather than a hardware. But neither of those are particularly stressing you. You're commenting that this is how Apple rolls in a sense.
Yeah, so I think perhaps the mistake that a lot of people are making, in my view, is to look at the earnings growth forecasts over the next 2 years, which don't look all that exciting, and then they dismiss the investment case, and they kind of assume that Apple's best days are behind it. But, you know, we've been here before.
Yep.
Apple's earnings growth, as you point out, is very lumpy, and I think that the services business will have will experience a sort of a flywheel phenomenon where that growth will all of a sudden accelerate meaningfully and unexpectedly at some point in the next 5 years, and the share price will react accordingly. That would be my suspicion.
Yeah, and I remember when Apple hit $0.5 trillion. I remember when it hit $1 trillion, and all the talk around Apple's mature, its X growth, there's no more growth coming here. Here we are at 2.5, and Henry Biddlecombe, fund manager, Anchor Capital, saying $5 trillion next stop. Henry, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles today, talking there around Apple doubling from here out. You holding Apple, looking for more super growth? Give us your vote. Give us your thoughts. Perhaps you've taken profits. Perhaps you think tech is overpriced, overrated, or perhaps it is your favorite stock. That's it for today. Our poll we were asking you yesterday on LinkedIn and Twitter on those Sasol results. What were your thoughts on those? Almost half of you said, actually, quite good. And I got to say, I probably err to that part of the equation. Certainly, debt coming down nicely. Just under a fifth said disappointing, and around a third of you said came in as expected. As I said, a lot of folks had wanted a dividend, didn't come through, but the company is rather paying off debt aggressively. Not a bad idea. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We are live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app at 6:30. 6:30 a.m. podcast available just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie Kodora, Nicole Masekla, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.